This is a replay of the Wednesday night, December 3rd, WGN show. We started around 10:30, just after the game. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoIP, for the world's best customer services. OneVoIP, check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have about 2.5 hours to spend together. I hope you'll join me. 888-876-5593. That's 8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E. That will get you to me on whatever is on your mind, providing it has absolutely no import or any social significance. We'll tackle it. Very brief show last night. But plenty of time to mention that Chubby died. Chubby and the Turnpikes, also from Tavares, of course, Chubby Tavares. And we talked a lot about their beginnings and the fact that many people talk about the five brothers, ignoring the fact that, yes, there was a sixth. Doesn't make it much into the news or any of the retrospectives, but there was John, who died in the, I guess I hear about 2008, but left singing long before those, that, because in the 50s, he was singing, and the interesting thing was his wife was really singing and got a deal with Sue Records, and so Linda and the Del Rios put out Come On, Let Me Try. And that was when that came out. I think it was 1962 on one of Sue's subsidiaries, Cracker Jack. And interestingly, the backup of Linda, the Del Rios, turned out to be the oldest three Tavares brothers: John, Ralph, Pooch, and you know, Chubby as well. Just in the waning moments there, Chubby, of course, the lead singer for so much of the stuff we know, so much of the wonderful stuff, and we'll be playing more of that too. Although, as I mentioned yesterday when I played "I Know the Inside Story," Chubby and the Turnpikes, before there ever was a Tavares, there was Chubby and the Turnpikes on Capitol, and that was a terrific song as well. So yes, I note with great sadness that he's no longer with us, but not much surprise since he retired from singing a few years ago due to ill health. Yeah, they had about 14 hit records on the Hot 100, but 27 on the R&B charts, including three number ones, one of which actually Whodunit. Yeah, a lot of people discount that, but in fact, it was one of the three. So sadly, Chubby, who by the way wasn't Chubby, he was born at 11 pounds, and his grandmother immediately nicknamed him Chubby because of his birth weight. But other than that, not so. Survived by the kids and his girlfriend, Sherry, and rest in peace to Chubby. Yeah, hated hearing that news on the 29th. So we talked a little about that. And beyond that, I realized I forgot. I promised Mark, yes, Mark, that I would list the top 10 for the World's Worst Hit Records, because he missed those. He missed the part of the show where that we gave that out. Though I thought we did it sufficiently often, but apparently not. So always wanted to keep my promises. Yes, it's your votes only. And there were over 261 different songs. And what was interesting is how many artists were nominated for multiple songs. But this was the first time that an artist actually made the top 10 for multiple songs. And it was Barbara Streisand, who tied at number 10, tied herself with Memory and the Way We Were. Number 9, Tiptoe Through the Tulips. 8, The Village People, YMCA. 7, Paper Lace, The Night Chicago Died. It was the number 1 record, by the way. And, so sadly was the way we were. Right? I know. And Celine Dion, My Heart Goes On, number 1 for 2 weeks in 1988. That was number 6. America, Horse With No Name, their first chart record, 1972 on Warner Brothers. Number 4, Richard Harris, who got all the way to number 2 with MacArthur Park. Number 3, Starship, We Built This City, number 1 for 2 weeks in 1985, but brought back ad nauseum with commercials. Beatles, Hey Jude, number 1 for 9 weeks in 1968, and I tell you what. And number 1, which has happened more than once before, Billy Ray Cyrus, Achy Breaky Heart. All right, so that's the list. Now, in the past, we've done your guilty pleasures or your Christmas horrors. I don't think we're going to do anything official this year, but those of you who have called in with some of your guilty pleasures, we'll be playing some of those. And then we won't be playing some of them, depending on what they are, so, and your requests as well, I think. But most of tonight, we'll maybe do a few more Tavares for sure. So, 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. If it's on your mind, it's on mine. And there was something I had seen, interestingly, that I thought was pretty interesting to talk about. Yes, that's right. And I've since lost it. Oh, well, you know, stuff happens. But let me find it here. Actually, it was the derivation of the okay. I won't say the word okay, because obviously it's initials. So an abbreviation, what's it stand for? Well, that's kind of interesting. It goes back to President Martin Van Buren and his 1840 reelection tour. His campaign nickname was Old Kinderhook, which referred to his hometown, okay, somewhere in New York, I guess. Campaign organizers picked up on the Boston newspaper's use of OK for Old Kinderhook, turned it into a slogan, OK is OK. And so around the country, there were OK clubs promoting the president's reelection. Now, unfortunately, the slogan, as you would expect if you thought more than a few minutes on it, was easily co-opted by the opposition. Yes, that's right. Orful conspiracy with a K, right? Orful, yeah. We don't need to spell, do we? Catastrophe. He lost. He was the incumbent, and he lost. And so the connection to him faded away, but the usage continued. And actually, if you trace it back further, the Boston Morning Post used to use OW for all right. That's OLLWRIGHT, meaning all right, of course. And then they went from that to all correct with a K and all that. But since the mid-1800s, OK has gone through a number of edits. Of course, the most common spelling, OKAY. But as far as the OKEH, which to me was always a record label, oh man, some good stuff on that. But it goes back to President Woodrow Wilson for that. He signed off on documents, OKEH. And word was that it wasn't for OK, the two letters. It was for a Choctaw word that sounded similar to OK, meaning it is so. I guess the word is lost to history because I didn't see that in any of the articles. Of course, the K sound became really a trend all the way around. And in fact, it was President Jackson who referred to the cabinet as the KKK, the kitchen cabinet. Got another K there, and he'd really be in trouble. But it's worldwide, though. The Scotch say OCHA, so they say, for yes, indeed. The Greeks have Ola Kala for everything as well, and the Finnish use, looks a lot like IKEA to me, but OIKEA for correct and exact. So there you have it, a little bit of that. And, you know, it's interesting because it's something we use every day. And if somebody said to you, well, what's OK stand for? I don't think any of us could come up with anything. As far as why it stuck, why we're still using it, that might have to do with the telegraph. Because in 1844, when the telegraph was invented, the two-letter signifier OK strengthened as a fast and easy way to communicate. And so that was a standard response to confirming a transmission was received. So, yes, OK meant all right, good to go, but fewer characters, obviously. So that's the deal. Now, there were those like Mark Twain who just didn't like it. And Louisa May Alcott also, she used it once in her original 1868 draft, But then she switched from "I'm okay with that" to "I'm cozy with that" in the next version. Yeah, so there you have it. And then there's the use where it's not innocent and agreeable, where it can be disconcerting and downright mean as far as that goes. But you can read that for yourself. So that's the deal there. Yeah, we also have the genesis of curse words, but I think we'll leave that for another show. Though some substitutes that have come out over the years, yeah, we might go over that. I don't know. We'll definitely play some Tavares. And before I do anything else, I'll definitely tell you about the Sea Crane Company this week, especially because this week, and only this week, 10% off on your entire order, no matter what you buy. So if you've been eyeing some things in that catalog, ccradio.com, take a good look at that. Yeah, save 10%. Now, while you're looking, take a look at that CC Radio 3. That's John's bedside companion with the addition of Bluetooth. You can use that speaker to have things sound a lot better than they ever would on your smartphone. But not only that, it is terrific, like all of Bob Crane's radios, in that it has amazing reception. In fact, I've never really A-beat them and compared all of Bob's radio to each other, but I will say if I did, the CC3 and the CC Radio 2E probably would be at the top of the list. And you know what you can do. Take a CC Radio 3 and put it next to the average radio, tune to a station that barely comes in on the average radio, and see what happens on the CC3. It'll sell itself. But not only does it have terrific AM and FM reception, but of course it's got emergency capabilities like NOAA weather and the 2-meter ham band and weather alerts, and it's got a clock and a dial light and a timer and an alarm and some presets, so it's just terrific. But if you're listening for voice content, like I say, that speaker probably worth the price for that alone. Audio quality for the spoken word sounds like the host is sitting right next to you, and with separate bass and treble controls, you can have it sounding the way you want it to sound for amazing audio clarity and quality. But right now, 10% off. So if you've been thinking about it, it makes a great gift too. This is the time to call or go online, even better. If you can go online, go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com. If you can't, they've got the world's best customer service. They'll answer all your questions, and you can order by phone at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, ccradio.com, the Sea Crane Company. You look at that CC Radio 3, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
GM.
and Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yep, Tavares and Who Done It, their last number one R&B song. Never did have a number one pop song. Freddie Perren wrote it, and just a wonderful song. Love those songs that mention all the old radio and TV detectives and book detectives like Sherlock Holmes and Charlie Chan and Ellery Queen and who else is in that? Beretta, McCloud, Kojak, Ironside, Dirty Harry. That's a lot of them. But, you know, Freddie Perren wasn't the first one to do that in a song, actually. If you go back about 15 years earlier, you'll find Jewel in the Rubies. Remember Kidnapper? So they are Jewel and the Rubies. Jewel was teaching in Baton Rouge, and actually it was a rip. The music itself is another song on one Don Robey's labels, came out about the same time, and I can't think of it right now, but I probably will later. But anyway, long gone. And of course, if you're not into Carolina Beach music, you probably never heard Jewel and the Rubies before, and probably never will hear them again. But that was on ABC Paramount. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh, and we got another 2 hours to spend together, and I'll prattle on if that's the case. But I believe that there is something else to say right now, and actually somebody paid to say it. So we'll be right back after this on WGN Radio.
WGN Radio.
Radio. I'm Molly James. Yeah, Chubby leading the group. Tavares, Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel, another Freddie Perren, Just Jewel. That was an international hit. That was number one in the Netherlands, and it charted in pretty much everywhere. Yeah, if you can find it on a map, it charted there. Maybe not number one, but it did well. And that was recorded in 1976 and was part of their fourth album, Sky High. And a wonderful, wonderful song it is. So, yeah, rest in peace, Chubby. I'll miss you, especially. I played it last night. But, yeah, I know the inside story is still just a terrific record. Well, so many of them. Now, before we get to Eduardo, and we will, and there's plenty of room for you, too, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I should mention who it is. I said another soul great has left us. And, yes, today, Steve Cropper died. And, well, you know, again, not a shock. We're all getting to the age, but even so. And we'll talk about that as well, as you can imagine, and maybe play some stuff. Yeah, not only did he co-write a bunch of hits, I mean so many, and we'll talk about some of them, but produced as well. And, you're probably going to hear when they're doing obits on TV and all that, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, which he co-wrote. And rightfully so, big, big hit. But, yeah, what I'm wanting to know is, why aren't you hearing Candy by the Astors? he co-wrote that as well. Or maybe something he produced, like I Never Found a Girl by Eddie Floyd. So, yeah. Or even some of that wonderful Otis Redding stuff that he co-wrote. Mr. Pitiful. All right, so all that and more will be coming up. And whatever's on your mind as well. Speaking of which, Eduardo is in Tampa. So what's up tonight, Eduardo?
Yeah, good evening, Rod. Well, I made it back from Anaheim.
Good. So tell me all about it.
Yeah, so they had the 15th annual Pasatan. KFI, all the hosts were at the Anaheim restaurant.
Okay.
Over there north of Disney. Okay. Yeah. It was fun. I never went. I never been to such an event like that. But it was great to see. I took photos with all the hosts that were there from morning to the end.
Well, I will assume that you were the person who traveled the furthest for this event.
Yeah. There weren't any other people that I know. I think the couple that I was talking to is thinking about going to Ocala.
Okay.
But I know John Cobo has a house. He told me yesterday he has a house in Sarasota.
Okay.
So that was interesting. But, yeah, so money-wise, 955,000, 92,000 pounds of pasta. I saw the truck there on the side.
Oh, man.
Full of pasta. Yeah, I mean, Chef Bruno says he has, like, 4 full-time drivers.
I guess. Wow.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's something.
Well, good. Good. Well, glad you're getting out. Now, what else is going on?
Yeah. It was fun to get out there. I, I rented a car and drove over there, hung around a little bit near Newport Beach and walked the pier and all that.
All right.
I'm glad I didn't do any earthquakes. No. That was a little.
No, if you wanted to, if you had wanted to feel earthquakes, your most likely place near there, the closest to you, and I'll tell you, the earth moves here almost every damn day, and that's the Palos Verdes Peninsula. So it's a little north of you, and if you're in Long Beach and then you go north to San Pedro, after that you get to the Palos Verdes Peninsula, and I swear the earth is moving there every damn day. But other than that, it's fairly quiet.
Yeah, I was glad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice,
Well, good.
Had breakfast there, but everybody was nice, taking photos, talking to the host and the people there. Even at the end, it got emotional because I think I told you earlier there was that one guy that they pulled out from a wreckage. And so he met up with two of the people that saved him.
Good.
So that was very emotional towards the end of the show.
Yeah. Well, good. So how many people were there, do you think?
Oh, I mean, people were in and out. I mean, and there were more people because they were working. So, as you got into the late afternoon, early evening hours, there were more people there.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so it was nice to see that. I mean.
The 15th annual.
Yeah, the 15th annual. Yeah.
Yeah.
No child should go to bed hungry.
Yeah, Katerina's Club. Right.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Well, that sounds like fun. So there you were on Anaheim Boulevard in Anaheim. All right.
Yeah. It was nice to get out there, and obviously I've never been to that area, but other than being in Disney, I mean, some years ago, obviously, but they didn't know that was, you know, nearby there, so.
Oh, sure. All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I went into John Wayne, you know, and actually connected in your area, Phoenix.
All right. Yeah, John Wayne, man.
And on the way back to Austin, so, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah, it was... It took almost the whole day. I almost felt like I was going to Europe.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. Well, if you survive John Wayne, you're halfway home right there. Yeah, nice little ascent taking off from there due to the noise abatement.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice airport, you know.
Well, yeah,
except
for the noise abatement requirement, yeah. So, yeah,
okay.
they get up high fast due to that. And,
even Ontario was, you know, when I've been over there, Ontario was okay too.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a much different area for sure. All right. Well, good. I'm glad to hear you went and survived it and all that.
I made it back safely. Yep.
Excellent. Excellent. Yep. So what's going up with job search 2025? What's the latest?
Well, I'm still, you know, doing with the stadium, you know, the sports stadiums, the box, the that school where you pretend to be a patient.
Yeah, the medical thing.
Clearwater, Nova,
yeah.
You know.
I think that's hilarious. Yeah. I want to hear about the next time you're a patient. That's just hilarious.
January, yeah, it's going to restart because they're, as you know, with the schools, you know, they got their winter breaks, holiday breaks, so they'll restart in January. So there'll be more stories.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait to hear what conditions you allegedly have next.
And elections. I'm still doing that too. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Good.
Yeah. I'm staying busy. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. And mom's okay.
All right. Well, you have a good weekend. Yeah. Right. I can't call tomorrow, but if I do, I'll call in with something good.
Sounds good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
it. Okay. I'll enjoy the show. Thank you.
Now tomorrow I might not be on. Let me, I may be preempted entirely tomorrow. Let me check. I know I should be more organized than this, but I miss Carol so much. She kept me acting like I knew exactly what I was doing. But let's see what's going on tomorrow. I have a half hour tomorrow, maybe after the Blackhawks, and they're usually very predictable in their endings. So I say we'll have a half hour to spend together. Adam says 12:30. Okay, we'll have a half hour tomorrow night to spend together, and we've got another hour and a half right now. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio. W. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, they're the Astors and Candy, 1965 on Stax. And yeah, it was Steve Cropper who produced that. And actually, in the 50s, they were playing around Memphis. They were four guys, quartet, as the Duntinos. Nothing happened there. And then they became the Chips, naming themselves after Chip Moment, who was the producer at Stax at the time. Head of A&R, actually. And when he left, in fact, it was Steve Cropper who took over. But I'll get to that. And they changed their name after that to the Astors, 65, with the help of Steve Cropper. They hit the charts. And I thought it was a fine record all the way around. Yeah, not terribly surprised, because, as I said, we're all getting to the age. He was 84, turned 84 last month. Actually, I think October. No, but in any event, Steve Cropper was terrific. And he was originally from, like, Missouri, West Plains or something like that. And he moved to Memphis with his family as a child. And while he was in Memphis, he was exposed to black church music, and it just had an impact on him. He acquired his first guitar when he was 14, and, you know, he was idolizing everybody from Loman Pauling of the Five Royales to Chuck Berry to Billy Butler from Bill Doggett Band, or even Chet Atkins, yeah. And they formed a little group, the Royal Spades, he and a friend, Charlie Freeman, and they became the Marquees. And you'll probably remember Last Night, which was a big hit in 1961. But the Marquees did a lot of backing for Stax. And the reason they were the Marquees was there was a marquee outside the Stax studios bearing the name of the former record label there, Satellite. Satellite became Stax later. And Jim Stewart, who was president of Stax, kind of noticed him and saw that he had a lot going on, including some maturity beyond his years. So when Chip's Moment left Stax, he went to Steve and said, "Hey, you want to head A&R?" And yeah, it took about 3 seconds to say yeah. And the house band was Booker T and Louis Steinberg, who was replaced by Duck Dunn. And in fact, it was Duck Dunn who Steve Cropper was on tour with when Duck Dunn sadly died in 2012 in his sleep in Tokyo right after a concert. But I remember the closest I was to that was Park City, Utah, where they're going to be playing at the high school. And I said to John, "We're going." And so we did. And it was Duck Dunn and Steve Cropper and Eddie Floyd. And of course, when Eddie Floyd did Never Found a Girl to Love Like You Do, you know, I'm hooting and hollering. And of course, everybody else is just looking at me like I've lost my mind. But the worst thing about it was the sound system there. I give him credit for doing those gigs, because the sound system, I'm sure, in other places was equally bad. But back to the genesis of the Stax House Band, the drummer was Al Jackson Jr. And in fact, Al Jackson, I've seen him quoted in the last day or so in some of the obits, and rightfully so, because he felt that Steve was, you know, about the greatest guitarist ever, and Cropper returned that feeling for Jackson as well. Now, if you're saying, "Gee, I don't know much about Al Jackson," well, that's because he was murdered, unfortunately, in 1975. And oh man, that was just horrible. They've never caught the guy. It was I think a burglary interrupted, but it was a deal where he was scheduled to fly to Detroit, actually, to produce a major Land session in 75, and he delayed going because he wanted to watch the Thriller in Manila on the big screen at the Mid-South Coliseum. So after the fight, he returned home. He was living with his wife Barbara, and by the way, estranged wife Barbara, because previously Barbara had shot him in the chest after he assaulted her. And the attempted murder charges were dropped when the judge determined she was acting in self-defense. Well, anyway, so they were living together. He was, you know, filing for divorce and intending to move out. So next thing you know, he's murdered. And so, of course, all eyes turned to Barbara. It wasn't. It absolutely wasn't. But not only that, the interesting thing, next thing they did was they thought it was Barbara's good friend, Denise LaSalle. And they thought that she was harboring a fugitive wanted for armed robbery. Yeah, well, no charges. Obviously, it wasn't Denise either. As far as who was the guy who came in, nobody knows. But bottom line, what we do know is that was the end of Al Jackson Jr. And musically, it was a loss. But Steve Cropper was huge, and so huge that when the Beatles were coming to the United States, one of the things they wanted to do was go to Memphis and work with Steve Cropper, period. And they were ready to go. They made plans, and Brian Epstein said no. Security problems there, and this is before anybody was murdered. Security problems, you're not going, and they didn't. But certainly Steve Cropper soldiered on and, you know, wrote so many things that we'll talk about as well, and produced so many things. And as I say, performing pretty much to the end, sadly died today in Nashville, 84 years old. I don't have the details exactly of what, but I'll look for that, and we'll reconvene after the news right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, Booker T. and Eddie Floyd wrote that, but it was Steve Cropper that produced it, 1965, my all-time favorite Eddie Floyd record, and rest in peace, Steve Cropper. Yeah, so we'll be playing some more of that, too. So between Chubby Tabaris and Steve Cropper, ooh, they say things come in threes. Let's hope it's just a duo this time, but time will tell. Brian and Seneca, welcome to WGN Radio.
It's great to be back, Raleigh. How are you doing this evening?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Wow. Reason I called is because a Route 66 tourist motel halfway between St. Louis and Rolla / Fort Leonard Wood is supposed to be reopening in spring of 2026.
Yeah?
This would be the Shamrock Court Motel, located in the beautiful small town of Sullivan, Missouri.
All right. And so they're undergoing reconstruction here?
Yes, they've been undergoing reconstruction since 2021, mm-hmm. when YouTube content creator and Route 66 aficionado Roman Rich Dinkella and his wife Christina bought the place from the family who had owned it previously.
Oh, that's great.
Now, what that family had done after Route 66 bypassed Sullivan in favor of going as I-44 is they converted it from a 10-room motel to a 5-apartment apartment building.
Okay.
So they've been spending the last 4 or 5 years not just restoring the hotel in general, but they've also been on apartmenting it, so it's going to be opening with 9 rooms.
Okay.
You know, top quality kind of boutique style place.
And we'll still have the green. We'll still have the green neon. We'll still have the green neon, though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, gotta have that.
The green neon was some of the first stuff they fixed.
Yeah, because that's the only reason I remember it, because it's so pictorial when you look at the old pictures of that. So yeah. Oh, that's great. Now, so spring of 2026. Good. All right. And so I assume there'll be nine rooms in which we can spend the night. So that'll be fun.
Yes, and if I have both the money and the time at the same time, I'm looking forward to spending a night there myself.
Oh yeah, no, I think you should, absolutely. You know, it's somewhat of a touristy little area. They've got caverns nearby and a state park. So that's the only thing I know. But I'm sure that strip will be part of that historic Route 66. You know, because as you know, it's all the interstates now. Like you mentioned, 44, also 40. But anywhere there's a town of any size at all, you know, more than 10 people, they'll have two exits: the on and off for historic Route 66, and Winslow is famous for that and all that. And some of the stuff there is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, definitely. In some places, the stuff is more like ruins and looking back to what once was. In other places, some of the luckier ones were actually able to survive being bypassed and are still in business to this day, or if they've gone out, they've only recently gone out, right. In some cases even come back, like the Jackrabbit.
Right, that's the comeback. The comeback is the interesting thing to me, because yes, economically it was just a slaughter when it became the interstate, but now more and more I'm seeing that they're, you know, the historic Route 66 sign where they're doing things. Now, of course, I guess it was in the mid-80s when they decommissioned it as a U.S. highway. So I guess there's not any, you know, federal funding for it, but there's an awful lot of places, and they're also, and you probably know more about this than me, developing bicycle Route 66.
Yes, in some places that's possible, because Route 66, when it was an active federal highway, moved several times, and sometimes they would just move over a few feet to the left, because we don't want to put pavement over these paving bricks, so we'll just move the highway 10 feet and build it four lane there. So you've got, in effect, a very wide sidewalk next to a old four lane highway. In some cases, since it doesn't need to be four lane anymore, they just take the oddball lanes and call them a bicycle path.
Yeah, good.
Like they're doing some of that, or at least able to do some of that here in Illinois between Joliet and Bloomington and Springfield and the like, because a lot of the places, when they put 55 in, they ultimately put 55 completely on one side of Route 66, and it's four lanes Route 66, and then a space, and then four lanes of 55, or six lanes.
Yeah, I think the decline started with the signing of the Interstate Highway Act, but the, you know, and that I developed a hobby of driving the interstate system. I used to say I'd completed it, which is more than the government had done. But now in my aging years, I'm kind of sorry I didn't try to do the U.S. highway system, which of course is numbered exactly opposite of the interstate system. And a lot of those roads are still there, decommissioned, but still there. Might be interesting to see some of those places.
Yes, and as far as federal cooperation, there's more than zero, but not a lot. There is, from what I understand, some federal backing for the historic route as a compromise so that they didn't have to start recommissioning Route 66.
Interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't think there was that much federal interest, because, you know, for most of us, it's more of an emotional connection than a needed highway. But it's our nostalgia,
well, yeah,
and we like it.
Certainly, nostalgia drives a lot of things.
Yes.
For example, 64 and a half to 67 Ford Mustang.
Right.
The only thing you can't buy as a new old replacement part is a live VIN.
Ah.
So okay. If you've got a car with a good title and there's nothing else left to it for a 64 to 67 Mustang, it's a very easy fix. Remove the rivets from the VIN plate, jack the VIN plate out, roll the old junk from underneath the VIN, roll in a fresh car that's never seen the highway before underneath it, lower the VIN down on the jacks and re-rivet it in place.
There you are. All right. Well, sounds good. So, have you driven all of Route 66? What's left of it, anyway?
I've driven I've driven almost all of the length, not necessarily all on the highway. For example, between Kingman and Barstow, uh-huh. I have not driven a section that goes through Oatman with the tame but wild burros that wander in town every day.
Uh-huh.
If I make it out there, I'm going to want to do that one time.
Sure.
Although preferably in a rental car or somebody else's car in case the burros sneak up early and the lowering of the speed limit sneaks up late.
Yeah. Now, have you been to the U-drop?
You see what a deer does to the front end of your car? That ain't nothing to a burro.
Oh, I know. I know firsthand. Let's not discuss that. But, yeah, have you been to Shamrock, Texas for the U-drop-in, which is one of the newer buildings?
I've driven through there several times.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's one of the places where it's actually really easy to not be stuck on I-40
yes.
because, you know, I've been through Shamrock. I've been through Glen Rio.
Right.
Amarillo, of course, but Amarillo is its own odd little duck.
from the pronunciation on down, yes, Amarillo is. And the way it's there, technically, it really should be Oklahoma, but that's another story. But yeah.
And of course, the Rock Island Railroad used to go through there, but it was pulled up I think it might have been the mid to late 80s.
Okay.
And that was a few years after the Rock Island Railroad itself went completely broke, so the tracks were pulled up because they wanted the scrap iron and they wanted the land back.
Right. Yeah. Well, neat. All right. Well, good deal. Well, let me know. If you go, I want to know how it is. I'll be fascinated to hear because I remember what wonderful pictures there were of that, just like the Shamrock. I love the neon and all that and the look of it. And I'll be curious how it's holding up and when you go, whether it's packed. You know, did you have to make reservations in advance? Tell me all about it.
I'll be sure to.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Yeah. How neat. And yeah, nothing like a good dose of neon all the way around. And it is. It's a lot of fun to see the old route. And yeah, many of the communities are doing historic 66 now because, of course, it's become a tourist attraction. So kind of like full circle. Here comes the I-40 and there goes the town. But now, hey, coming back in the name of nostalgia. All right, so we'll get to Fran and Austin. There'll be room for you too. 888-876-5593 right here on WGN Radio.
That's my name now. Oh, they call me Mr. Pitiful. That's how I got my fame. But people just don't understand what make a man feel so blue. Ooh, they call me Mr. Pitiful, 'cause I lost someone just like you. They call me Mr. Pitiful. Most every place I go, but nobody seems to understand
I'm Rowdy James. Oh, it's one of those times when I forget I'm on the radio, just sitting here enjoying Otis Redding, Mr. Pitiful, one of my favorite Otis Reddings, yeah, in memory of Steve Cropper. And all of a sudden, I said, oh, wait a minute, I'm on the radio. All right, well, hi, we're back. And let's see, Fran is in Austin. All right, Fran, I answer this line with trepidation because the subject says Jim in New Orleans. Don't tell me he's not okay.
I don't know. That is one of the reasons I'm calling. The last we heard from him, he was in the hospital, and it wasn't anything. I mean, we didn't think it was. He had gallbladder surgery.
Okay.
Which when I had gallbladder surgery, the only reason I was in the hospital was because I didn't have anyone to see if, you know, I had blood in my urine or,
right,
you know, anything right, like that. And so they kept me in the hospital. Usually it would have been in and out. And he was in for a couple of days. So we were trying to figure out, you know, what else was wrong. Anyway, we've called a few times since then. And, you know, we're all pretty good friends. We talk for hours on the phone and, you know, and that kind of thing. And we have not heard from him.
Oh, man.
So I thought, well, you know, since he's a regular caller on
right,
Raleigh's show, I will put out the word to, hey, Jim, if you're around, call Raleigh or call us. Or
yes, absolutely. We want to hear from you, Jim. Oh, man.
And, you know, I know, you know, sometimes we get busy and we don't call back right away, or he gets busy and he doesn't call back right away. But, you know, It's been a little longer than usual, so and since he was in the hospital, and he was in there for, I was not sure why he was in there for so long. It was just a gallbladder thing.
Here's the deal. It depends, because the gallbladder can burst and things like that. There can be a problem. So it depends on when they're getting it out. You know, it's routine surgery, one of the most surgeries done in America every year, when you catch it before you have a real problem. But if
I know I had so many stones in mine, they couldn't believe it. But we talked to him. I think when we talked to him, it was after the surgery.
Okay,
But he was still in the hospital, because I remember asking him, they didn't let you out yet? You know, because they let me out the next day. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't get me out of there fast enough, and I wanted to go faster.
Right. No, absolutely. But, you know, any surgery, there can be, you know, problems with infection and all that, although usually you'd be home by the time you discovered that. But if there were you're talking about bile ducts, so there can be injuries to that. But if you talk to him after the surgery, he went through the obvious possibility. So hopefully it is just nothing, because you talked to him after the surgery and he was lucid and up and all that. Did he mention when he was going home or that he was going home?
No, he didn't say. And we were trying to go, why are they keeping you so long? Because I think he had been, you know, a day or so after.
Right. What did he say?
And he didn't really say anything. He keeps things very close to the vest kind of guy, you know. If he doesn't want to tell you something, he won't tell you.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know whether...
Oh, hang on a minute. Don't go away. I just blew the break. Stay where you are.
I've got to know where I stand. I've just got to know where I am with you.
So here's a penny for your thoughts, a nickel for a kiss, a dime if you tell me that you love me. Penny for your thoughts, a nickel for a kiss, a dime if you tell me that you love me.
Walking, holding hands, you say you're mine. Another face steals your eyes away. It's just a guessing game, and I can't help feeling used. Love shouldn't be so dumb, confused.
So here's a
though face to face you swear I'm the only one. If I had a crystal ball, I would gaze into your mind. I'd see what you were thinking if my ship was sinking, if you're leaving me behind. So here's a
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's the last thing that charted for Tabaris on the pop charts. And no, that wasn't Chubby. That was just Pooch. Yeah, younger brother on that. And I thought it was a wonderful song. Kenny Nolan wrote it, and I have a weakness for Kenny Nolan songs all the way around. And that's further proof that I like his stuff. All right, now Debbie and Raleigh, we're going to get back to Fran. Don't go away, Fran. But Debbie and Raleigh says she has talked to Jim. So this is good news. What do you know?
Hey, good evening.
Well, thanks
or
for
good
calling.
Morning, whatever
yeah.
it may be.
Yeah. One of those things, tell all.
I'm going to, what is that song? I'm going to wait till the midnight hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Jim and I met in a very unusual way. Not met in person, but we met by phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because one night I mentioned the service Livewire to you.
Yeah.
And you couldn't find it, and you know, anyway, so I gave it no thought. And a few days later, I got a message from him on that service. And he heard me on there, on your program.
Oh, good.
So he signed up with that service, and we've been talking pretty much since then by phone.
Oh, good. Good. I'm delighted.
And he's still in the local hospital.
What's going on?
They want him to find housing that he can be checked on. He's doing okay, but he didn't have the gallbladder surgery. But
he didn't.
They want to make sure that he had the surgery.
Good, and that was fine, right?
Yeah, that was fine.
Okay, good.
But they just don't want him to be by himself.
I thought he was living with somebody, so he wasn't. He was living on his own.
Okay. I hate to, I don't know if I should say this. Maybe I'll try to say this carefully as I can. Unfortunately, the person he was living with passed away of an unknown cause.
Oh.
And he had to call the local authorities to help find that out, because he wasn't able to get up, and it was a sad situation. You know,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
So at that point, he had to go to the hospital. And then once he did that, they found out about the gallbladder. And after that surgery, they want to make sure he stays okay.
Oh man! Well,
he's a wonderful person, and
This is horrible. Now, any chance he can go back to New Orleans? Does he have family there?
I don't think so. But he really wants to go to New Orleans, and to be honest with you, I hope that'll happen.
Yeah, because I know he had years there.
Yes, he loves it, and we were listening to him. New Orleans Saints over the radio on the phones with each other.
Oh man! Well, I'm just
and so it was funny, you know. It was great, and
I'm just
so
sorry
about this.
We do have
mutual friends, you know, a fellow I used to know at school, and and Jim are ham radio persons, and okay. You know, we talk about you. We talk about in a good way. In a good way, of course. We talk about Fred and Gary, even though I don't know y'all. But you know.
Well, yeah, I'm trying. I'm racking my brains here because there's got to be a way. I assume that he moved to New Hampshire because his friend was there, and now his friend has died.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's just
his
horrible.
Friend wanted to move there because of the snow, and I probably told more than I should have, too. I may get reprimanded by him.
Well, no, we're just talking in generalities. That's enough. I don't know who the friend was or what the circumstance was, and that's fine.
No, I don't know all the situation either, but it was just really sad. I said, well, you need to call the authorities if you haven't heard from him, and he did. He called 911, and then, of course, that's when they found out, you know, what had happened. And so but he's a wonderful person. I'd love to hear him talk. I could you know, I could listen to him for hours. But anyway, that's another story.
We got to put our brains together and think how we can get Jim in a better situation.
You and me both.
Because there are so many people like you and Fran, everybody else who care for him. I'm not saying that any of you would be in a position to take him into your home, but there is probably something that could be done where, because to be in a facility because you've got nowhere to go is just heartbreaking.
I can tell you, I've never met the staff. Well, of course I haven't met the staff, but I would say the staff there is wonderful.
That's wonderful.
Every time I talk to him, they'll come in and they'll, do the usual things and check the blood pressure and this and that. But they'll also say, hey, here, let me put your phone such and such. Let me, just extra things that, and it's a really small city, but for them to have a hospital there with such good care, it's a great thing.
Yeah, that's a blessing in and of itself, but hopefully...
Yes, it is, but I hope he can get to New Orleans.
Me too.
We talk about radio, we talk about just everything under the sun. he's doing okay. And Jim, forgive me for spilling my guts.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. I don't even know if he has access to a radio, but if you do, Jim, and if you have access to a phone, call us by all means.
He'll probably be listening.
Okay. No, that's great.
But I spoke to him, actually he called me 2 days in a row, which is kind of unusual. Mm-hmm. But we just told me about another station that he found.
Ah.
Not oldies, what do you call it? Motel.
Okay.
Tell me about another motel station.
Okay.
So I talked to him on Tuesday.
Well, good. Excellent.
So
well, thank you for letting us know. This is excellent.
Okay.
That part's excellent news. Now we got to figure out what we can do about this. All right.
Yeah, I wish I could send you a text. I would have sent it to you that way.
No, I don't. I don't do texts.
May as well call in.
I should mention that if anybody has texted and wonders why I don't respond, it's because I don't see them. The phone is not text at all. It's just a voice line.
That.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people don't. Because occasionally I'll get a flame email. I've texted you for days. I'm like, well, how the hell would I know it? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good deal.
Well,
thanks.
I'm hoping the other James in the south side is okay.
Yeah, well, we heard from him a couple times, and I think he was battling a cold the last time, so he sounded a little under the weather. But it's a question of he's got to find another place to live, so that's what's going on in his life.
Well, you have a lot of great listeners, and...
Yes, I do, and I want every one of them to stay alive, at least longer than me.
That's right. That's right. We don't want to lose anybody else.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Lost enough this year.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
Anyway.
Appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, good night.
All right. So, that's good news from the standpoint of Jim's okay, not good news from the standpoint of, so now he's in New Hampshire and he's alone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Thank you so much, Debbie. But that was what I was afraid of because I had heard he told us that his friend died.
Oh, really? See, I didn't know about that. Okay.
And I didn't know whether to, whether to mention that or not. But since Debbie did, we did know about that. And that's one of the reasons that we were so worried, because when we tried to ask him, why are they keeping you in the hospital, because they just kept me for one night. And so, we were concerned about that, and he just was very evasive about it, and now I know why.
Yeah.
I can understand. So I know when Katrina hit, that we actually got to meet him because he was staying with the family in Austin. We were trying to figure out some way that he could stay with us, but we were on Section 8, and we were concerned that, because if you have any guests staying,
right, yeah, all that.
He could have gotten, and our place was small, and that kind of thing, and we didn't really, but we thought about putting him up during that point. Now we couldn't because we only have a one-bedroom apartment. But, you know, we sure would if we could, because we talk for hours, and, you know, he's a great guy. And so...
Yeah, and you know,
one of the things I was concerned about was that, because, you know, maybe because of his friend passing, he didn't have a place to live, or didn't, you know, whatever the situation. So thank you, Debbie. I'm glad to hear that he's okay. And hey, Jim, give us a call sometime, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you know what I'm sitting here thinking is that as bad as this is, the horrible part is that he's in a position that I have a feeling other people are in as well. And it's a real tough thing.
I can't imagine having to stay in a hospital because you've got nowhere else to go.
Right. And you know, sadly, as we all get older, if we don't have extended families and all that, we're all facing this, especially if a situation where it's a mate and you lose your mate. It's like, what do you do then? And, you know, I wish I had a good answer.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people.
I don't know what would happen if I lost Gary. Oh, my God, because I don't have any family.
Right. No, that's what I tell John that all the time, too. I say, I die first. I'm very selfish. Don't even think about going first. You don't get to.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, that's what I tell Gary. My health is worse than yours. I had a heart attack. I get to die first.
That's right. I die first. Exactly. I'm very, very strong about that. I'll be totally selfish about it. But in reality, I think that this is a societal problem that's going to increase because, you know, it's not that many generations ago that people lived with extended family, that there always were people around, you know, and over the last...
You know, even when I was a kid, you know, because I used to tell my mom, because she said, I never put you in daycare and I never took a dime of welfare. And I said, but Mom, you had a large extended family to take care of me. But now we're all scattered all over the place. I mean, I wouldn't even know my cousins if I ran into them. And we used to get together all the time at my grandmother's house. We all lived in the L.A. area.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
all of us just deal with our own little family group. We don't, you know, we don't deal with the rest of the family. I've got an aunt that lives in Texas, but I never see her.
Right.
You know, once in a great while I talk to her, but she's, you know, she's got her own health problems. If, you know. If my health gets worse, and I've thought about, you know, that I might have to, because, you know, if I can't use my hands and, you know, things start getting worse, I might have to go to some kind of a, you know, facility. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God, just let me die.
Yeah, right. Don't, let's not make that reality. Let's not bring that in.
I mean, you're so right. There are so many in the family, you know, traditionally, I mean, you know, my mother took care of my grandfather and, you know, if there wasn't anybody to pick me up off the school bus, one of my relatives would come and, you know, or during the summer when my mom had to work, I'd stay with, you know, different relatives and, you know, I'm so envious of people that have family that can drive them here and there and so forth like that. We don't, you know, Gary and I, we have each other and that's pretty much, and we got a couple of friends, don't get me wrong, but, you know, we have each other and that's pretty much it as far as the main stuff. I mean, people have busy lives.
Absolutely. But this is, like I say, this is a societal problem. And really, we talk very often about how things have changed in the last couple hundred years, you know, and are changing dramatically with the advent of digital technology, you know, almost unrecognizably so. But we're now at those generations where there is no safety valve and the numbers are going to be astoundingly large. And, you know, I don't have an answer, but I do know that it is a problem.
Yeah, and just, you know, I'm so grateful that, you know, every day, you know, even though I have my problems and I have my depression and I have certain other things going on, I say, I have a roof over my head, I have food in my refrigerator, I have a great partner, you know, I have a lot that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I said, yeah, quit your bitching and
right. No, absolutely. And that's the way to do it, is to count your blessings. But yeah, for many people who are saying, gosh, I see where this can be a problem, what can I do about it? For many people, there is nothing. And that's so the plight of Jim brings all this to mind, that we all collectively need to think about, well, what do you do? Because there, but for the grace of God, go any one of us.
Right. You know, and so many things are being cut, and I'm not getting political. I won't go into
well,
all that.
Well, right, but you know, interestingly, those things are not the kind of things that in the long run will help you anyway. What we're talking about in terms of that human condition, a government program or
right,
subsidy.
Right, the family.
It, yeah, it's
yeah,
not going to make a difference.
Families have been breaking, you know,
that's
breaking
right.
apart. Extended families just, you know, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, and you don't grow up and live and die in the same hometown anymore.
No, exactly. So I'll be thinking about it, and hopefully everybody else will be thinking about it, because this shouldn't be, but sadly, I don't have the answer. But it's there somewhere. It's got to be, because, as I say, one day we may wake up and it's you or me. So it's worth thinking about.
Well, just one, you know, Jim, there are people out here who care about you, so.
You betcha, Jim. If you're listening, Jim, we are. We're praying for you. We're thinking about you, and call. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks
appreciate
a lot, Rob.
It. All right. Appreciate it. Yeah. I'm glad, very glad that when I saw Jim's name that Fran wasn't calling with bad news in terms of him not being with us, and he is with us, so it just has to get better. And we'll get to Eric in Rochester. He's got a request. Ralph in Rockford, and there's room for you, too, coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Rotley James. That song I was thinking about before when I was playing Kidnapper by Jewel and the Rubies and saying it's the same damn song. Now, what I don't know is who came first, because they both were recorded in 1963, and I don't know the month. Now, the Joe Hinton record, that was on Backbeat, and Don Robey's listed as the writer, not as Don Robey, but as D. Malone, one of his nom de plume, so to speak. Now, so that's Joe Hinton, and if you missed us playing a Kidnapper before, this is Kidnapper, and tell me it's not the same damn song. Oh, wait a minute, wrong song. That's actually, that was the original Penny for Your Thoughts, but here was the original Kidnapper. Yeah, anytime now. You said it's the same song, so I don't know. All right, so and that first I mentioned was on ABC Paramount, but that was later. It first came out on La Louisiane. And I don't know who did it first. I almost have to believe that it was Don Robey's Joe Hinton, because otherwise Don Robey probably would have killed him. No, who said that? All right, so we've got Eric in Rochester. Welcome to WGN Radio. How are you, Eric?
Hey, Raleigh, I'm okay. And you?
All right, so good. How's your mom?
Okay. Oh, well, apparently she's alive and kicking. They sure did a number on her at the Mayo Clinic.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I mean, good for the outcome. Bad she had to go through it.
In her 70s. Yeah. No. I wanted to know if you could verify it. You're good at verifying stuff.
What?
Now, one, well, there's three or four of them. One that come across was, did Dr. Charles Mayo really walk 18 miles in 1932 or something? They let him off on the train, and they had a snowstorm in Caffin.
Uh-huh.
You know, they said it was 18 miles from here.
It's highly unlikely. 14. that it was a defining event in the 1930s. And apparently, this is a claim that's been around for a while, and a lot of people say it's a misrepresentation. Yeah. But supposedly, Dr. Mayo and his brother William and his father, they would ride horseback, and they'd walk long distances to treat patients in rural Minnesota. Yeah. And this is the late 19th centuries here, you know, sort of the 1890s,
oh,
things like
1800s.
That. Yeah,
oh,
right.
That must have been the son then.
Yeah, right.
Because
and
they had two sons now.
Yeah, he retired in 1930, died in 1939, and the reality was the Mayo brothers had chauffeurs. Uh-huh. All right, so, you know, the other thing is...
Those Irish men?
Yeah, they actually had cars and chauffeurs. Not all the time, but they did. But anyway, at the time he...
Back in the horse and buggy days, probably.
Yes, that's right.
We got a lot of Amish here.
At the time he supposedly did this walk, he would have been in his late 60s or his 70s. So making the 18-mile walk, not
short, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's not likely. And so I think the point of that, the point of the story was just to show the demanding work of early rural physicians who sometimes.
And the doctor came to you at the mail, and the sisters really opened it.
Yeah,
you know, the St. Franciscan, but you know that Assisi Heights looks just like you're in Italy,
mm-hmm.
inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to Assisi Heights? Anyway, so okay, good.
Now, what's interesting, then, by the way, when they retired, you know, they retired to Tucson.
Arizona, there you go.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. They didn't really want to be in the winter anymore there. They would be in Arizona, and they'd even visit medical facilities and all that kind of stuff. Apparently one of the doctor's drivers was one of the first people to ever have a home movie camera. And they recorded some of the family's journeys and stuff like that, life in the desert and their formal affairs and things like that. It's interesting. And you've probably seen it. They have that 7-minute movie, you Call of the West, the Mayo family in Arizona. So you can see that. So, yeah. You still with us? No, we haven't lost Eric, have we? Eric, what happened? Come back to me, Eric. All right, well, hopefully he will. All right, so, and I'm glad Eric is back in Rochester, talk about, again, to be around family and to be around a place you know, because he'd been in 29 Palms area, and it wasn't particularly kind to him, to say the least. So, Eric, I'm sorry you dropped off. I don't know what happened, I think he'll be calling back right after this on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh Jane. The Wicked Picket, Wilson Picket, produced by Steve Cropper with Jim Stewart, co-written by Steve Cropper with Eddie Floyd, Soulsville, USA, 634-5789. All right, so 888 888- 866-556-5593. Now, Eric, call back, but we can't keep him long because John said he's about in a parking lot at about 2 degrees, so we're not going to keep you very long, Eric. But during during that break, I looked up the chauffeur deal, and yeah, it was apparently a kid he hired at 16 to drive a couple of his cars. The guy later became a race car driver. So, yeah, you can...
The kid or the Dr. Mail?
No, the kid.
Oh.
The kid.
I thought, gee, no wonder.
Yeah, right, no. But it's interesting because there's so many films on them, and, you know, of course, the first operating table at St. Mary's was something that Dr. Charlie constructed, and so you can...
Oh, yeah, have you been to the Plummer Building?
Yeah.
You can see their old office, they keep it, right?
Yeah.
That's a beautiful place to go.
But apparently when they hired this, when Dr. Charlie hired this kid, Ellis was his name, I think he drove Dr. Charlie's two early Knox mobiles, a two-cylinder runabout and a seven-passenger car. So,
well,
yeah, you can read about that.
Fancy enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Well, so they weren't walking 18 miles in the mud. He had a driver that... Stupid article came across something on Facebook saying it was old Rochester, Minnesota articles.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought, well, God, I can't believe. He goes, oh, Dr. Mayo became very impatient. And there was a blizzard in Cass, and they let him off on the train, and he had to stay in this flea bag motel for 2 days. And he decided he's walking straight to Rochester down the road on. Which Highway 14? No, I don't know what it was called then. A county road.
Probably not called
but
anything.
18 miles he went.
Yeah.
No.
No, I don't.
A dirt tail.
Yeah, I don't think so. But it is a tale that's around a lot. But I think it just shows, and they did. You know, they did.
Interesting.
And they went out of their way, obviously, to treat people in
to go out of town.
Yes, far flung areas and rural. You know, and in a way.
Why did Rochester start? Why did Mayo Clinic start? The tornado hit, and then the Franciscan nuns came, didn't they? And they, Dr. Mayo, could you help us? He said, why, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the rest is literally
and that would be
history.
The start of the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah.
Bigger than St. Jude's with Danny Thomas.
Well, different.
Anyway, they
the
used to call it 50, very different.
Yeah.
But Destination Medical Center has been the slogan for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Not now. Nope. Downtown all over the place. It's bolt forward.
Okay.
And you should see the downtown. It does not look like Rochester. It's so, and then, it's growing so fast and very modern.
Oh, I'll bet. And I bet you they've got a lot of overhead and underground tunnels.
I was in the flood.
Like
my grandpa fed the monkeys in the 40s at the Mayo Building.
Oh, that's great.
The statues are inside now, you know.
Yeah.
Because they built it on there. Okay, so that's that.
Well,
and then can you verify a couple other things before we have to... No, I'm fine. I'm warm in the car.
Okay.
All right. It's 2 degrees, it says on the temperature gauge. It's going to be 11 below by 9.
Yeah.
Is Dolly Parton really opening up truck stops? And then Charlie Ryan sings The Hot Rod Lincoln.
Not originally.
Who did that originally, though?
Actually, if you're wondering about that song, it goes all the way back to a guy in Spokane, Archie Shibley, and it was called Hot Rod Race originally.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I'm going to see if I have that Archie Shibley on this. I don't know if I do or
you
not.
You have the original there?
Yeah, I may.
On you?
I might.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I haven't heard it. I heard, what is it, the New Riders of the Purple Sage in 71 or whatever. But
Then
Charlie Ryan, I've heard a lot.
Right.
Good. Can you play the original so I can get the real vibe from it?
I'm hoping I have it on this machine here. But yeah, it was Archie Shibley.
And then...
And not the only one, by the way.
You know about the business of radio.
What about the business of radio?
Why did I buy a $3,000... You could sell this car for $7,000 or $8,000 in California. This top-of-the-line Kia Optima EX Premium from Canada.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're in Minnesota, it's not that far, for $3,000. But it's got Sirius XM radio, and I didn't know. I go, this is just your sample station. For the first 3 months I drove it, it was on Metallica. channel whatever.
Yeah, I know, they do.
And I thought, they're just going to play the same old thing over and over again. And then I pushed a couple buttons, and it goes, I got the full subscription for nothing. I didn't buy it. It must come with the car. Now, is Sirius bankrupt? Are they
No,
they're didn't
not,
they change?
Well, it's Sirius XM. They're a joint project, but and there's a lot about their finances. But no, a lot of cars, you
know. And I love having satellite radio. Are you on it?
Not anymore. I was on it for about a dozen years. So everybody credits it to Charlie Ryan in 55, but it was actually an answer song to Archie Shibley. So you want to hear the original?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, awesomely.
And my brother Joe took off in my Ford from San Pedro. We hadn't much gas, the tires were low, but the doggone Ford could really go. Now along about the middle of the night, we were ripping along like white folks might. When a murky behind, he blinked his lights, he honked his horn, and he flew out of sight. We had twin pots in the Columbia, but you people may think that I'm in a rut. But to you folks who don't dig the jive, that's two carburetors and an overdrive. Made grease spots out of me.
All right. Yes, like white folks should. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Archie.
Wait a minute. No. Can I please write that down for me so I can take it home with me and get inside and play it?
Archie
what
Shibley.
What do you call that one?
Hot Rod Race. Archie Shibley. It's ARKIESHIBLEY. Hot Rod Race. And so that was in
1950. I wrote him down.
Yeah, that was in 1950. And then Charlie Ryan in 1955 did, you know, the answer record to it that you've heard about Riley. And then Johnny Bond in 1960 also had a country hit with it.
Oh.
And Johnny Bond. Yeah, and he was an interesting guy all the way around. So, yeah.
What was he all about?
Oh,
what was his trip?
Hilarious stuff, actually. You know, I think I've got one album, Our Man in Trouble, but I'm trying to think what else I've got on Johnny Bond here.
Oh, wow.
But he was around, you know, forever. He started performing with Jimmy Wakely, if you remember him. And so that goes way back. But his big hit originally was Divorce Me, C.O.D. And also So Round, So Firm, So Fully Packed. And that was 1947. It was taken after the, you know, cigarette ad, obviously. But, you know, I'm sick, slick, sober, and sorry. And
what a character.
Yeah,
you're right about that one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He wrote 10 Little Bottles, which was a big hit. So there was a lot. But in 1960, he had the version of Hot Rod Lincoln. But, yeah, you can look that up, too, and Divorce Me, COD, and everything else.
You gave me the very original.
Yeah, Archie Shibley. You betcha.
Yeah. Okay, good.
All right.
And now I want to ask you a Mayo Clinic question. Do you know Jack Desley, the original illustrator of all the surgeon instruction?
Heard of him, but obviously I've heard of him, but obviously there's in the tunnel between the Keller and the Mayo, as you know, they've got some libraries and stuff. Yeah, some of those libraries.
Yeah.
So, yeah, read a book when I was hanging around there. Yes.
Okay, but that was Jack and Jan Desley. John Desley, you'll call him sometimes. His artwork is all over there, but he wrote all those illustrations of all the intricate surgeries.
Right. There were some that said it was...
family friend. We used to go. They lived on Maywood Road. His wife, Jan, had lupus.
Yeah.
But Jack Desley was a wonderful, humble man.
And
he didn't even act famous. And Maywood Road is a nice address.
Yeah, a lot of pen and ink drawings.
That way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
And some of them were signed as John W. Mayo, actually. But
Did he?
Yeah, you got to look at them. So
why?
How did he get away? Who knows? I mean, just
my grandparents. We knew them, and we had his artwork. Oh, he could do anything.
Oh yeah, I know.
Downtown pictures and
I know. And
he was. And my grandma sold them.
Yeah.
Later.
Okay. But yeah, a lot of medical art stuff. A lot of medical art stuff, and yeah, in that library in that tunnel, I know. So a lot of that stuff.
Well, I love talking to you. And Rochester, I'm going to try to get back to the West Coast now. because this is too cold now.
No. Don't stay where you are. Winter will be over. Trust me. We will talk.
It just began.
But
11
it's
below
right.
Now by morning.
I know. It'll be a few months. It'll be a few rotten months. Mm-hmm. Really, I know that. But after that, you're near family. You're near friends. You're near things you know. Stay there. It's not so bad. It's a few months a year where you can't go out, but they've got plenty of tunnels and they got plenty of overpasses. You cannot be out if you don't want to be out. So stay there. All right, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Okay,
take
thanks.
Care.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Yeah, he just got home. It's home. All right. So, that's important stuff. Rochester's great. Yes. The only person who knows what's in the tunnel between the Kohler and the Mayo Clinic. All right. Well, what else do you have to do when you're a kid? All right. So we've got Ralph in Rockford in the waning moments. And I mean waning moments. 3 minutes go to Ralph. All right, Ralph. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for giving me 3 minutes. I was going to tell you about a little EST experience that I had on your show tonight.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, it was about 10 to, 10:51, you played Whodunit, okay?
Yeah.
And then the news came on, of course. Then I turned my radio on. I like David Jennings a lot. I had to listen to him. He's got a great voice.
Yeah.
And when that was done, then I was thinking, okay, well, I'm going to call your show and request Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel.
And
okay.
I played it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you played it before even before I got to you to request.
Well, good.
And here I'm thinking, what is this, a new service of WGN that you play? Okay, now the second thing was, after that, I thought, okay, what else can I contribute to the show? So I said, I'm going to call her about Steve Cropper, who died at the age of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just dying again. Here you come with Steve Cropper.
Yeah.
can you imagine that? I can only say I have to go back to Mary Wells in September 62. You beat me
to the
punch.
Yes. Or the Answer record by Gene Chandler, You Threw a Lucky Punch.
Yeah, lucky punch. Yeah, yeah. Well, I started feeling superfluous, But I mean, that was twice that you read my mind before I even could talk to you.
Well, maybe I'll do it again tomorrow night. We only have a half hour to spend together tomorrow night, but I will be talking to you then, and you've ended the show now, and thank you, Ralph. Sorry we didn't have more time.
Well, maybe tomorrow we have a few more, little more time.
Okay, I hope so. Thanks. All right. So,
okay, I'll call you. Thank you.
Good deal. We'll talk to Ralph right after the game tomorrow night, and hopefully to Ruth, too, who's calling. And you didn't get to 2020 news. Ooh. So right after, if you're listening to WGN, you won't hear it tonight, but you can go to Raleigh.net and listen to the replays anytime, because we have to hear today's edition of 2020 news, of course. Yes, right. And It's a wonderful little project for those who are into top 40 radio from the 60s, when the news was just a work of art, to say the least. Kevin Gershon and Steve Langford put this together, and it's three stories in 90 seconds, and all of them are absolutely true. They're just written in ways that you wouldn't normally hear on, say, CBS. All right, so that's pretty much a wrap until tomorrow night at midnight 30. So we thank Adam for keeping us on the air, and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling, and hope to talk to you tomorrow night right here on WGN Radio.
Slide first, think later. Plus, Louse on the House and Alligator Razzmatazz. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Panic slide. A man on a taxiing jet at Atlanta's mega motorway of the skies pulled a bonkers, brain-blitzed blunder, panicking over a perceived pistol, dialing 911, then popping the emergency exit and sending the slide screaming onto the runway. Passengers froze, pilots fumed, and police flooded the tarmac. The frazzled flyer was bagged, booked, and branded a menace for reckless conduct and catastrophic chaos creation. And the snarky seatmate summed it up best. Next time, dude, breathe, don't bail. A movable fleece. Brooklyn owes the charmer plunder spree, an inveterate ingrate of an influencer, snagged 7 times at swank serveries in the past month for skipping out on self-indulgent smorgasbords of suppertime splendor, cops claim. This Brooklyn Dodger the fuzz find makes herself at home at fancy food joints, dines like a duchess, offers to post photos and rave reviews, but leaves without paying the bill, the Times reports. The free grows in Brooklyn, one cop confides. We know her. She does this all the time. But one resto owner admits the talented Ms. Shifty's supposed no-pay notoriety actually pays off in prolific PR. I am Gator, hear me roar. Swamp Boogie, where the jawdads sing. The Gators got Guinness record royal ratings for registering a real racket. Florida's bellowing black water chompers are champs. The noisiest crocodilians in the world, Guinness gauges, especially when the rip-roaring reptiles are randy. These alligators so clamorous when they're amorous. It's as deafening as standing beside the blade of a prop plane, only more dangerous. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.